So today we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, Chapter 8, which is called, entitled, The Talks Between the Lord and Ramananda Rai. So we'll cover two verses today, from 26 to 28. So 28 is on the board. So I'll just read the translations for 26 and 27. Number 26, the Brahman is thought, we can see that this sannyasi has a luster like the effulgence of Brahman, but how is it that he is crying upon embracing a Shudra, a member of the fourth caste in the social order? 27. They thought, this Ramananda Rai is the governor of Madras, a highly learned and grave person, a Mahapandit, but upon touching this sannyasi he has become restless like a madman. 28, which is on the board. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. While the Brahmanas were thinking in this way about the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw those outsiders and restrained his transcendental emotions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ramananda Rai was intimately related to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, he can be accepted as a sajatiya, a person within the intimate circle of the Lord. The Brahmanas, however, were followers of the Vedic rituals and were not able to have an intimate connection with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Consequently, they are called vijatiya loka. In other words, they were not pure devotees. One may be a highly learned Brahmana, but if he is not a pure devotee, he is a vijatiya, an outcast, or one outside devotional service. In other words, a non-devotee. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai were embracing in ecstasy, the Lord restrained his transcendental emotions upon seeing the outsider Brahmanas. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shlakaya Chakshuram Militam Yenetasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So we've jumped into the middle of this pastime with Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Rai. But the story has begun some time ago with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrival in Jagannath Puri. And this is a series of classes which builds up to Gaur Purnim, the Lord's appearance on Monday. So it's nice for us to meditate on and consider the philosophical, some of the philosophical aspects of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in order so that we can prepare for his arrival, his appearance in our lives. So one of the key episodes of the Lord's pastimes was his interaction with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was a Shankara follower in the Shankara line. And you could say perhaps had a little bit of a sort of impersonal understanding. But he was a very, very advanced person. Now for us who are indoctrinated with impersonal is bad, we tend to reject that an impersonalist can have any good qualities. Now actually even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does say something like that. That an impersonalist, you know, whatever qualities they have, they're ultimately a waste of time. Because really, if we do not accept the personal form of the Lord, or indeed the form of the person of the Lord's mercy, his personality, we do the Lord a disservice. So it doesn't really matter what the rest of our qualities are. We've actually missed the whole point. However, when we consider it, there are still qualities which even an impersonalist may possess, which are actually valid qualities. So here we will see this, we saw earlier, this interaction played out between two persons, one who is a great well-wisher of spiritual order, spiritual life, spiritual progress, but just has a different conception of what that is. So when Lord Chaitanya comes to Puri, he comes to see Jagannath. He enters the temple of Jagannath, and he faints. He displays ecstatic symptoms. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is there, and he sees that the Lord is displaying symptoms which are very, very uncommon. You know, the ecstatic symptoms are there. Hair standing on end, bodily transformations, fainting. And he recognizes that this person is not imitating. He does not really accept that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord at this point. But he understands that he's a great person who's demonstrating some genuine symptoms. And so he arranges for him to be taken to his house to rest and recuperate. And he looks after him very nicely. He tends to him, cares for him, brings him Jagannath Mahaprasadam, feeds him nicely. And in this way he's showing great compassion to who he sees as a junior sannyasi. Because the Lord has just taken sannyas and he has come there. And out of a sort of a type of fatherly affection and care for him, he's looking after his welfare. Now he thinks Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a little emotional, a little in need of studying Vedanta under some strict with some strict guidance. So he makes this offer to him that I would like to teach you Vedanta because this will be good for you to be a strong sannyasi. You're obviously a new sannyasi, and you should know what it actually means to be a proper sannyasi. It means that one has to be very strict and rigid and very accomplished in Vedanta, because ultimately that is what will sustain one's renunciation. One of the most powerful aspects of the force that sustains renunciation is transcendental knowledge. To chant the holy name of the Lord doesn't require external renunciation. But if one is intending to be externally renounced, they need to have a very, very strong philosophical background. There is simply no question of one taking sannyas or even actually being internally extremely renounced if they do not have a strong Shastric basis. So this was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's desire to serve the Lord. Now, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had a brother-in-law called Gopinathacharya, who was a great devotee of the Lord. And he had tried, as relatives often try with their relations, to try to make them understand that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord. But they would have many discussions, many arguments, many disagreements. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya never really accepted that the Lord is who he says he is. And but Gopinathacharya persisted. Sometimes his method of dealing with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was to challenge him, sometimes to almost insult him by pointing out how foolish he was for not understanding the Supreme Lord's actual personality. But he also would encourage him by stating that actually it's not really a surprise that you don't understand the Lord's personality. Because unless one has actually received direct mercy and empowerment from the Lord, one simply cannot understand the Lord and his personality. One can actually read Vedanta all day long, but the personality of the Lord may not manifest. That requires the actual mercy of the Supreme Lord himself. So in this manner, he would criticize him. He would chastise him. He would encourage him, but somehow hope that one day he would become a devotee of the Lord. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there under the care of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And so one day they went to the temple of Jagannath. And there, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya decided to offer this service to the Lord. He said, I would like to teach you Vedanta. Please hear from me. So in the temple, they sat down, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya proceeded to give him discourses, explanations from Vedanta, from the Vedic literature. And this talk, this discussion went on for 7 days, quite a long discussion. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was giving the full philosophical spiel, giving all the grammatical nuances, giving the details. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was simply sitting there quietly listening, just hearing, not displaying any sign of either understanding or lack of understanding or some query. So after 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, okay, it's very nice that you've been sitting here listening to me while I've been speaking Vedanta, but tell me what is on your mind. I don't actually understand whether you're understanding anything I'm saying. What is your reaction? There's no response. Normally when you're giving class, you can look around and you can see if someone's ready to hurl some tomatoes at you. You can know you've said something wrong. Or you can look around and people are falling asleep. And then you know, okay, it's not too controversial. And they're falling asleep. But in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's case, he was just silent. Just not saying anything. So he asked him. And then Mahaprabhu said, yes, I've been hearing what you're saying. But unfortunately, your explanations are clouding the purport of the Vedas. Your explanations are like a cloud. They are covering the real meaning of these verses. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, well, actually, no, it is understandable. These verses are quite complex. They're difficult. It is understandable that yourself as a new young person would be confused by them. And Mahaprabhu said, no, actually, the verses are completely clear. I understand the verses completely. But your explanations are clouding the whole issue. And then Mahaprabhu proceeded to give him the response to the 7 days of preaching. And Mahaprabhu explained to him, using the very same verses that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had used, he drew out from there a very personal, very devotional understanding that was missing in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's presentation. There was a little bit of a discussion, backwards and forwards. But essentially, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had all of his arguments completely destroyed by the Lord. And by the end of it, he surrendered to him. And he realized, here is a person who not only has his glories broadcast by those followers around him, but who has now actually demonstrated and actually managed to transform the heart of such a hard-hearted, logic-based individual such as myself. He appreciated that Lord Chaitanya had actually demonstrated the qualities of transcendence. Gopinath Acharya and others had been trying to convince Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that this is not just a divine devotional personality, but he's the Supreme Lord. And his response to that was always, well, you say that, but according to the Vedas, there's no sign that the Lord is supposed to appear in this age. And so he understood that finally when the Lord appeared and he did this extremely uncommon, miraculous act, of transforming someone who was a hardcore Vedantist, he realized, yes, this is the Supreme Lord. Only the Supreme Lord could actually do this. No one else has the capability to stand up against my logic and argument. And so we have this as an incident that's happened on other occasions as well. The Digvijay Pandit was similarly completely philosophically smashed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is the Lord's special prowess, that he can take individuals who are very, very accomplished, very scholarly, very capable, and he can deliver to them something which they do not have. That is an exceptional contribution of the Lord. So our substance has to always be tested. Our glories may be broadcast by so many people, you know, our strength of whatever it is, our quality of devotion, our glories, but ultimately they will be tested directly as well. Propaganda only goes so far. Now the world largely goes on propaganda, sadly. And if we are honest, we will understand that most of us are also driven by propaganda. What we hear from which person and how it's conveyed to us affects a great deal how we act and behave. Which is all well and good, providing that we're hearing the right propaganda from the right person. It's fine. It's not a problem. But if we're not, then often we will not be able to separate the substance from the propaganda. And we will accept something that is very nicely presented, very eloquently presented, maybe very pleasingly spoken or convincingly spoken, and we will accept that as the truth beyond a weaker presentation which may actually be of more substance. So for devotees, we have to learn, we have to learn to practice to go for the substance, not the propaganda. It can be difficult. The world is sending out a lot of propaganda in all different directions from different individuals who have different ideas in life. So our idea, of course, the fact that we came to Krishna consciousness, the fact that we surrendered somewhat to the Supreme Lord, is a direct sign that we rejected the propaganda of Maya. Isn't it? It's a direct statement to that effect, that we realized that however convincing the opportunities in the world were, we realized they were subordinate to the opportunities supplied by the Lord, even though we may not have directly encountered extensive propaganda about the Lord. So we all have that nature. As devotees, we know how to separate the substance from the propaganda. Now here, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has heard a lot of propaganda about the Lord. He's this, he's that, he's the Supreme Lord. But he had to hear the substance. He had to directly receive instruction, directly have his misconceptions completely smashed. So at a certain point, we will have our inner qualities also tested, potentially by other devotees, potentially by situations. And at that point, if our substance is not strong, our propaganda will fall away and we will be simply exposed for what we are. So we have to be very careful and we have to make our substance strong. And that is done simply by following the process very purely, by chanting with great concentration, by studying Prabhupada's books scrutinizingly, by actually behaving in all aspects as a devotee should behave. So this was the conversation between Sarvabhauma and Lord Chaitanya. And finally, when Lord Chaitanya leaves Sarvabhauma's residence and eventually leaves Puri to begin his South India tour, just before leaving, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asks him to meet one personality as a special favor to him. He says, I want you to meet this person who ordinarily is not anything to be devotionally proud of. He seems that way, but he's actually a great devotee. And his name is Ramananda Roy. And I'd like you to meet him. So Lord Chaitanya says, yes, I'll be happy to do this. And then the Lord travels through South India. He has a few different meetings, the Kurma Brahmin, then Vasudev the leper. These are very nice, enjoyable pastimes that we can read in the previous chapter. And then he comes to this place where Ramananda Roy is due to come. So Mahaprabhu is there, and Ramananda Roy arrives on a palanquin. He's actually a government servant, and he's the governor of Madras, I think. He has quite a high position. He's respected, and when he comes, there's brahmanas and others who are following him with him as part of the entourage. And that is when we see this pastime taking place today. We see that Ramananda Roy gets down from the palanquin, sees Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and very soon, after some exchanges, they embrace. Both of them are crying tears of ecstasy because they can both detect great devotional advancement in the other. And there is this wonderful embrace going on, which is, for them, amazing, but for everyone else, somewhat bewildering. Why? Because first of all, here is a sannyasi. Now, sannyasis are not so frivolous or so carefree with their emotional expressions. At least that's the traditional, the traditional conduct, the traditional visible behavior of a sannyasi. Very grave, very solemn, very, very strict. But here is Mahaprabhu. Now, they're thinking this is a young sannyasi. He doesn't quite know what proper behavior is. But he's embracing this person. And it's not a problem that he's embracing him, but this person is of a completely different social order. He considers himself to be a shudra of the worker class, even though he's a governor. Now that's an interesting thing. How is he a governor if he's considered a Shudra? Well, the governor is a position that's appointed by, you could say, the king. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. And now we know that the ruling class of persons are the Kshatriyas. And the Kshatriyas the Kshatriyas establish their own position. That's something interesting about the different Varnas. The Kshatriyas are not allocated a position. They establish their own position by their strength and valor. Heroism, courage, shauryam, tejo, dhritir, daksham, yuddhecha, pipalayana. All of these things allow them to defeat their enemies, conquer kingdoms, and establish their unrivaled position. And then they will have so many other servants who assist them in running the affairs of the state. So the position of a governor is something that's appointed by the Kshatriyas. So the position of the governor is actually considered to be like a Shudra, a worker assistant to the Kshatriya. Now this is just a little bit of exploration of the social hierarchy and customs of that age. So you have Ramananda Roy, who considers himself to be a Shudra. And now a sannyasi, a member of the highest varna, brahmana, the highest order, should not really be embracing a Shudra, because that's not typically the social custom. Now, that obviously needs a greater discussion, but that's not really the essence of the focus of today's class. Here you have two persons from different situations, and the brahmanas around them are all confused. What is going on? Now we can come to different conclusions based on that. We can say, oh, this is some archaic system which has such rigidity built into it. Something so simple as an interaction between a person of a higher order and a lower order is frowned upon. What a backward culture. That's what people typically say, isn't it? But Mahaprabhu never says anything like that. Nor do any great devotees ever conduct themselves like that. The actual system of the orders and the ashrams is not a concoction of man, although the form in which it manifests in the modern or in recent times, contemporary times, is a very much perverted version of the original system established by the Lord. The Lord establishes Chaturvaranyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasaha. Right? There are these four divisions, four varnas, four ashrams. The varnas are, what are the varnas? Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. And the four ashrams are? Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. So there's these eight different combinations, eight different options, and each person has one of each. They have a varna and they have an ashram. Typically, the varna, at least in traditional times, when things were more regulated, the varna was typically determined by your birth. So if you were born into the ruling class, if you were born in the royal household, it's expected that you would become a king in due course of time. King or a queen or whatever, you know. If you are the son of a brahmana, it's expected that you would follow in the father's footsteps. You would become a brahmana yourself. So typically these things came according to one's birth in a particular family. Now, as time has gone on, obviously, most of the population today is Varna Sankara, as the Gita says, that people are of mixed Varnas. So people are born in a particular family, in a particular situation, but their nature is something perhaps slightly different. And so then a more useful metric is actually the person's quality and character. Previously, the two things were aligned. One is born, one is in the royal household. One develops a certain mentality, a certain character, which is reinforced with that environment and training. And the two things are aligned. So quality and character is always the key substance. And many interesting pastimes happen in Krishna's Leela and also in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, where there is some slight difference between a person's actual competence and capability and their birth or upbringing. Those give rise to many interesting pastimes. And here is another one of those taking place. That here the social structure has caused a few people to become confused. That doesn't mean that the social structure is unimportant or less important. Rather, what we understand is that there is something superior to the social structure which is now being demonstrated in this pastime. The social structure is there, and it is the hallmark of a civilized society. It was actually Bhishma Dev's instruction to Yudhishthir Maharaj, when Yudhishthir Maharaj was completely despondent after the Battle of Kurukshetra. He was simply seeing carnage everywhere. He was seeing social order, the pillars of society, totally destroyed. So many warriors had been killed. So many people were dead. There were so many widows now there, children not cared for. And Bhishma Dev's instruction to Yudhishthir in this highly lamenting state was that you should establish Varna and Ashram. You should make sure that every single person has an opportunity to be actively engaged within their Varna and Ashram. This was almost one of the fundamental components of his lesson to Yudhishthir Maharaj. Because through this, he would be able to engage every single person wholesomely and in a way that uplifts them towards Krishna. The establishment of structure and orders in society is not something backward. It is something advanced. And as all of us can see, society is definitely not on a path of advancement at the moment. It is on a path of degradation. With every release of the latest constraint or structure or established principle, people are thinking they've moved up. Rather, what's happened is that they've become more liberal and more degraded. The two things go hand in hand. When you're easygoing with your principles, you are degrading yourself, not advancing. So, orders of society, structures are actually a sign of advancement. And the classless society, well, Prabhupada had very little positive to say about that. Very little that was positive to say about that. He never glorified this idea of a classless society. He said this is some imagination, some concoction. Even if you artificially remove the social labels, the fact is that there are some people with innate natures. Some people who are predisposed to sense gratification. Some people who are predisposed to making money. Some people who are predisposed to ruling and manipulating others. Some people who are very learned and very advanced and should be ideally using their learning and advancement to propagate Krishna consciousness. You will never avoid this. Rather, what you will do is give all of these people a structure which is a large soup. It's a large mess. So that what each person needs in order to advance is never given to them. A Shudra is put into a training system with Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. He receives completely the wrong training. A Kshatriya is trained to be like a Shudra. A Brahmana thinks making money is acceptable, or being mercantile oriented is acceptable. So that's what the mixed up society does. It allows each person to be less than their actual capability under the guise of advancement for all. It is not advancement for all, it is degradation for all. Rather, it is far more intelligent and capable, as Prabhupada did. We just have to look at Prabhupada's behavior and example to understand our direction. Prabhupada took multiple different individuals of different natures, qualities. He gave them all common principles of devotional service. Chanting the holy name, propagating the mission of the Lord. And then he engaged them according to their propensities in various services. And never allowed one person to try to dictate to the other or to try to proclaim to the other that my service is superior to yours. He would always put a stop to it whenever he detected that. So these structures are there. And even in a devotional society, these structures will help us. And this is why Prabhupada said, 50% of my work is not done yet. The propagation of Varna and Ashram. However, the fact is, and we can also observe from Prabhupada's behavior, that this 50% was considered less important or less urgent than the first 50%, which is the establishment of pure Krishna conscious principles. So we should never make the mistake of considering that Varna Ashram is more urgent or perhaps even more important than the first aspect. No, the actual establishment of the quality of the holy name is the most important point. And the establishment of Varnashram will help devotees as well as society at large, but it can come more gradually. Now what we see here today is again this particular this particular balance being established. That according to social hierarchy, social customs, Ramananda Roy, Lord Chaitanya should not be so closely interacting. But there is something that is superior to this, and that is pure devotional service. And when there is pure devotional service, and when two individuals are on such a highly devotional platform that they can't help themselves, their ecstasies overflood any normal etiquette, customs, rules, regulations. That is the only license for overcoming rules, regulations, customs. In Kali Yuga, we like to remove customs, regulations, because they're seen as a problem, or something backward, as I discussed. We throw them away very, very whimsically, very casually, very easily. We don't like this distinction, that distinction, this behavior for this person, this duty for this person. Let's throw it all out. In Kali Yuga, that is not done for a higher purpose. Only if there is an overpouring of devotional ecstasy are these lesser sub-religious principles capable of being discarded. And not even discarded, just overridden temporarily. Mahaprabhu never challenged the actual order of things. It was never his mission. Some people call him a reformer of Vedic culture. Well, he was a reformer in the sense that he wanted to reestablish what Vedic culture actually is. You know how scholars debate about this and that. They analyze what Mahaprabhu did and they come up with different terms. Mahaprabhu wanted to reform the standard of devotional service. That is a fact, because devotional service had been highly degrading. And persons were representing devotional service who were not capable. So Mahaprabhu definitely reformed that entire scene and brought something amazing that was never released before. Pure love of Krishna. Pure love of Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. Accessible to anyone and everyone. And so he was very careful to do that within the social context. As a sannyasi, he was very strict. As a grihastha, he did his duties. As a sannyasi, and even as a grihastha, there were many occasions when the actual his spiritual capability, his spiritual substance, completely overrode the requirements of that varna ashram or whatever it was. And this happens in many occasions. And Jagannath Puri, throughout his pastimes, the social structure sets up a scene, and the Lord, through his devotional ecstasies, completely overrides it. That is the only license for overriding a social structure. Nothing else. Only when two persons are on the highest platform of devotional ecstasy can their interactions be somewhat avadut. Otherwise, avadut behavior is not just the prerequisite of a very advanced person. Avadut behavior is often practiced by persons of low caliber. You know, they just give up. They give up their rules. They give up regulations. They just do something whimsical, something random, something that they like. That's not respectable in society. That's why the term avadut is very interesting, because it applies to someone who is actually situated on a very, very high platform, but their external behavior appears contrary. So you have Shukadev Goswami who wanders around naked. Now in no civilized society do people wander around naked. You have the four Kumaras who do the same. And they do that because they're their consciousness is somewhere completely different. The actual rules and regulations that go with this body, with our social system, with our family, with our orientation, all of this, they just don't apply when faced with complete devotional excellence. But when if anyone else behaves like that, well, they would get chastised. They would be considered to be foolish. They would be considered to be irresponsible. Anarchy, anarchists, rebellious people who don't want to follow social orders, but for no valid reason. So this is interesting, that our progress in devotional life is to develop real, genuine substance, real, genuine spiritual ecstasy. That spiritual ecstasy makes everything else completely secondary. But still, Mahaprabhu is always guilty. Even during these episodes, he's always thinking, I better restrain myself. He doesn't think, I am a great advanced person. I should show these brahmanas what's what. I should just do the opposite of what they want me to do. No, he knows, this is my system. I created this system of brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras. Let the brahmanas think in their rigid, stereotyped way. That's the word given here. So he tries to restrain himself. Changing social systems was not his goal. It was not the goal of anyone, actually, even Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. When Prabhupada was saying that the whole order of things needs to change. We need to reestablish our independence. We need to reestablish independent control before Krishna consciousness can be propagated. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj just dismissed it. He said, no, Krishna consciousness is so urgent, it cannot wait and does not depend upon a change of Indian politics. It has nothing to do with it. We don't need to change the social hierarchies. We do not need to degrade them any more than they've already been degraded. We don't need to contribute, make our contribution in that direction. We need to just take whatever system we have right now. We need to try to improve it along with devotional principles, like, for instance, along Bhishma Dev's direction. But more important than that, we need to just act within that and do our devotional service. Changing orders, changing structures, changing hierarchies is not our business. We can spend and waste our entire life doing that. So, as we head to Lord Chaitanya's appearance, these are some aspects of Lord Chaitanya that we can take away. That first of all, he's so merciful. He's so merciful that he came amongst a group of highly unqualified people, the residents of Kali Yuga. He's so merciful and so caring that he came on the call of Advaita Acharya and gave us something which we completely don't deserve. He gave us the holy name. He gave us spiritual culture. He taught us scripture with devotion. He brought out a devotional purport from scripture. He exposed it. He gave us principles that allow our devotion to be tested, whether it's genuine, whether it's based on substance, or whether it's based on propaganda. He gave us the tools to do that. And he also gave us a great deal of mercy. Because as in this occasion, it is not we understand that it's not possible for someone to understand this is the Supreme Lord without the Supreme Lord's mercy. Similarly, for all of us to some extent, we've obviously received a little bit of mercy from the Lord. Maybe a lot in some people's cases. A little bit of mercy that allows us to consider that here is the Supreme Lord. Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are there, helping us move forward in our lives. This Kali Yuga is going to bring so many different austerities. We're all experiencing a little austerity at the moment, where the temple room is kind of half capacity as it would be normally, due to this lovely virus that's going around. So this is one of the opportunities that Kali Yuga provides, an opportunity for more suffering. Now, we can laugh about it, Only because what we can actually laugh at is the fact that most of the time when things are going well, we are thinking everything is okay. That is also a big illusion. When things are going well, they are not going okay. When things are going devotionally upwards, that's when they're going okay. So when a virus or some difficulty comes to us, we have to learn, we are reminded actually. As Prabhupada said, this place is not a fit place for a gentleman. It's not a place where a sane, advanced, sophisticated person would want to hang around. Krishna consciousness, Goloka, the abode of the Lord, the service of the Lord is the place where we want to be. It's interesting, isn't it? The place is the service of the Lord. So wherever the Lord's service is present, that's the place we want to be. Physical location is secondary. That is the place for our protection. So we have all these wonderful opportunities. We can take any situation that comes which is troublesome and we can try to rise beyond it. As in the discussion between Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, it is described that by listening to the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, one's present miseries are forgotten. Only in the katha of the Lord are the present tribulations, difficulties, troubles, miseries forgotten. And then it says, at least for some time. So even if they might reappear after some time, due to our lack of advancement, which is what it is, still for that period of time we are experiencing relief from the onslaught of material nature. When we hear Krishna's pastimes, when we hear the wonderful episodes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can just immerse our entire consciousness in the Lord's Leela. That is the way for us to directly participate in that Leela, to immerse our consciousness in it fully, so that we are actually there. The only thing stopping that is our own minds, and perhaps we haven't quite received the mercy of the Lord. Otherwise, nothing stopping it. So, let's keep our spirits up. I suspect there are a lot of online listeners today, online viewers. Let's keep our spirits up. Let's look forward to this festival. The festival that will be taking place in our hearts. Gaur Purnim. It won't be taking place in the Haveli this weekend, but it'll be taking place in our hearts. So make sure that that festival is not compromised in any way. The festival of the Lord has to happen. The Lord has to be welcomed into our heart, into our consciousness. And we have to do that by showing the Lord that we value His instructions, that we value His kindness in coming, and that we are very much appreciative of this wonderful chance we have to engage in devotional service, which is such a high qualification. Devotional service is so high, we have no right to actually be involved in it. But He's giving us that chance. So thank you very much. Let's make that appeal to the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Any questions? Any comments?